Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Tuesday, January 25th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Welcome to the program. It is the day of the State of the Union. We will have Digby from the blog Hullabaloo on today. You'll notice the tweet was corrected. Tomorrow we will have Eric Alterman on, giving us a little post so to wrap up, but more on his book, Kamuki Democracy. Always a pleasure to have Eric Alterman on. Let's hope he's not eating during the show, which he is wont to do. The next story, or the first story today, I have to say I present to you with a certain amount of glee, some mixed feelings, but I cannot deny there isn't a certain amount of glee involved in this next story for me. Chicago appellate court, state appellate court, has ruled that Rahm Emanuel is not qualified, I should say, because of residency, to be on the ballot for Chicago's mayoral campaign. And this is a rather significant problem for Rahm, as early voting starts in 1 week from today, on January 31st. Rahm Emanuel's attorneys say they intend to appeal the ruling to the state Supreme Court as soon as today. Four of the seven Supreme Court justices have to agree to hear the case. One of the justices is the wife of Chicago Alderman Edward Burke. Not Edmund Burke. That would be strange if he came back from the dead to run for Chicago. I assume he's dead, Edmund Burke, who has endorsed one of Emanuel's opponents. One of Emanuel's, that's a pretty big stretch. One of the justices is the wife of an alderman who has endorsed one of Emanuel's opponents, I guess. I don't know. One of Emanuel's attorneys tells WMAQ's Mary Ann Ahern, the WAMAC, that they do not intend to ask her to recuse herself. Oh, okay, so they're not looking for her to be recused. I'm not even sure what the point of that story is, except for them to sort of try and cast doubt on the state Supreme Court's ruling beforehand. We think there may be bias, but we're not going to actually suggest that there is unless we lose. And meanwhile, Rahm Emanuel fights an appeals court decision. CBS's 2's Roseanne Tellez reports, with absentee voting beginning January 31st, the deadline to get the ballots to the printer is this week. We're going to press pursuant to the appellate court's ruling with one less candidate for mayor, says Langdon Neal, chairman of the Chicago Board of Elections. We've already been in contact with our printer, and the process for printing ballots is now underway. Seems sort of like a bullshit law ruling. He apparently rented out his house for the past 2 years when he was serving the president of the United States, as opposed to not renting it out. I imagine if he had the money to not rent it out, he wouldn't. And because who likes somebody in their house if they don't have to have somebody in their house? But on the other hand, Rahm Emanuel, you are not. Wait a second. Shoot. Now how do I ended up, I wanted to go for you are a douchebag, and I ended up getting Ocean Surf. Either way, you're either a douchebag or you're Ocean Surf. But either way, Rahm Emanuel, you know, aside from the problem that I have with your politics, putting all that aside, from very objective, non-ideological position, the fact that you quit your job 3 months earlier because you saw a better job out there than serving the president and the country at a time of crisis, you know, my opinion of that is that, you know.
You are a douchebag.
Let's try that one more time.
You are a douchebag.
There you go. And so, you know, I'm going to cheer that that's happened to you, even though I think that law is not so good. Because you know what? I'm not in charge of making those laws. And I don't know. Unfortunately, he is the highest in the polls in Chicago for this race. And I don't like the idea that voters are being denied a candidate that they want. But I don't know. I tweeted that I thought this was one of the best arguments against atheism. Because somebody heard my prayers to screw with this guy. Meanwhile, the Bush White House broke elections law.
Hey, what happened?
Surprise, surprise.
Well, you gotta be kidding me. Many of you will remember this story that Karl Rove was assembling people in government, in the executive, basically outlining a strategy of how to turn their agencies into mechanisms in which to elect more Republicans. New York Times reports yesterday the Bush White House, yesterday or today? Yesterday, the Bush White House, particularly before the 2006 midterm elections, frankly, the entire time they're in office, it's routine. In other words, it happens like in the same way that you would get coffee in the morning. Wow, that's surprising. You have coffee. No, that's my routine. Every morning I go and I brew a cup of coffee and I get it on the way to after I brush my teeth or before I brush my teeth, or I get coffee at the Dunkin' Donuts on the way to work. That's my routine. The Bush White House routinely violated a federal law. In other words, by violated, they mean broke a federal law. In other words, performed a criminal act that prohibits the use of federal tax dollars to pay for political activities by creating a political boiler room that coordinated Republican campaign activities nationwide, a report issued Monday by an independent federal agency. So they routinely performed criminal acts, breaking the Hatch Act, the law that says federal employees cannot engage in political campaigning while they're on the federal dole, I guess. The report of the Office of Special Counsel finds that the Bush administration's Office of Political Affairs, overseen by Karl Rove, served almost as an extension of the Republican National Committee. Because to serve as an extension of the Republican National Committee, the name of the office would not be Office of Political Affairs. It would be called Extension of the Republican National Committee. And because they never did that, it was only almost as an extension of the Republican National Committee. Developing a target list of congressional races, organizing dozens of briefings for political appointees to press them for work for party candidates, and sending cabinet officials out to help these campaigns. The report based on about 100 pages of documents and interviews with 80 Bush administration officials, took more than 3 years, documented how these political activities accelerated before the 2006 election. This included helping coordinate fundraising by Republican candidates and pressing Bush administration political appointees to help with Republican voter turnout pitches. So in other words, if you've been appointed to the FDA, what can the FDA do to help Republicans win? Or the EPA or any other agency that can be used strictly for political purposes. The Office of Special Counsel, a relatively obscure federal agency, is charged with enforcing the Hatch Act, a 1939 law that prohibits federal employees from engaging in partisan political activity. Certain members of the White House political staff, including top aides at the office, are exempt, but the law still prohibits the use of federal money, even by these officials, to support political causes. The report found that during the Bush administration, senior staff members at the Office of Political Affairs, such as Karl Rove, for instance, violated the Hatch Act by organizing 75 political briefings from 2001 to 2007. So that would be 75 violations right there of the Hatch Act. The investigators also found evidence that the Bush White House improperly classified travel by senior officials as official government business when it was, in fact, political. And the costs associated with the travel were never reimbursed. In other words, tax dollars were misappropriated. You could say embezzled. A spokesman for the Office of Special Counsel said Monday, and this is the coup de grace, folks, because remember, in this administration, a spokesman for the Office of Special Counsel said Monday that because the administration officials had left office, it no longer has jurisdiction to file any charges. That's right, folks, don't look back. Let's turn the page. It also said that it has not made a formal referral to the Justice Department to ask it to pursue any possible charges. And a Justice Department official on Monday declined to comment when asked if it might file charges based on the report. Of course they won't. Of course they won't. Turn the page, folks. Turn the page. That, I'll tell you something. If you wanted to go on, if you wanted to rob a bank, you just go in, you tell the judge, I robbed the bank in the past. Can't we let the past be the past? I mean, why are we wasting all these judicial resources on not helping the American people? The FDIC will insure the bank. The bank has insurance. GDP goes up. They're going to hire more security. They got to replace the safe I blew up. Let's just turn the page, Judge. Come on. Come on. Let's do the bidding of the American public. So there you have it, folks. The key is that when you commit these offenses while in office, the violation of the Hatch Act, it's an old law. Let's be honest. It's an old law. It was from 1939. That was almost, God, centuries ago. Centuries. Did they even have a constitution in 1939? Was there an American constitution in 1939? I'm not sure about that.
I have no idea.
No, it's almost impossible to know, because I don't think they had the written word back then. Folks, it's a very old law, the Hatch Act, and if you're not in public office at the time, you know, if you happen to, like, stall and say, I'm going to testify, I'm going to run out the clock, or I'm going to resign when I start to feel the heat, Karl Rove, then there's nothing you can do unless the Justice Department steps in to file other charges, but, you know, that would be looking backwards, and there's nothing to be gained from that. We all know that. In society, we never prosecute anybody for what they've done in the past. It's all future crimes now. That's we just haven't developed technology to perfect the future crimes. We come back. We will talk to Digby about the potential future crimes that may be outlined tonight in the State of the Union address. We'll be right back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Back. Sam Cedar here on the Majority Report and on the telephone, so to speak. Not so much the, well, it is, I guess, halfway telephone. For me, it's on my computer. For her, it's on her telephone from the blog Hullabaloo at digbysblog.blogspot.com. Digby, welcome to the program, Digby.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I wanted to talk to you about, in general, the State of the Union. You know, I know you have been one of the people, as I have been, who have been very concerned that Obama was going to announce cuts in Social Security in the guise of raising the retirement age, the age in which you're eligible to receive Social Security retirement benefits. And also cost of living increases and other sort of shenanigans involved in essentially cutting Social Security. The reporting now seems to be that he's not going to discuss it.
Right. And that's good. I think the idea was, among people who were concerned about, evidently there really was a major discussion in the White House about whether or not to bring to discuss Social Security in the State of the Union, and to bring it into the whole deficit reduction discussion, and so there was a method to the madness of kind of bringing attention to this and saying this, you know, you will have many unhappy people if you do this, and the idea was is first of all to you know hope that he would actually give a full-throated defense of self. Of Social Security and say that absolutely he would not sign any bill that contained cuts to Social Security. And, you know, kind of along the lines of Clinton's 1998 speech, save Social Security first, sort of thing. And barring that, that he would at least not bring Social Security into the speech so that he wasn't laying down some marker that everyone would glom onto and say, that, well, you know, it's on the table, it's on the, you know, it's going to be part of whatever deficit reduction deals they do. So it appears that he took the second, that he's taking the second route, which is to just not mention it, which is better than nothing, although it's not optimal because it still is possible at that point for it to be part of any future negotiations. He hasn't, you know, explicitly said that he will not allow it to be so. So it's sort of half of a victory, and it's certainly better than what it might have been if he'd have decided to go full bore on Social Security cuts. So
I've seen some reporting that suggests he's not going to call for any cuts, but that he actually may mention Social Security in terms of like it having to change. But it's really no way to know at this point, is there? I mean, obviously we're going to wait for the speech. So.
No, and if he does that, if he put, you know, I think if he even mentions it in the context of deficit reduction, I think we've got a real battle on our hands because you know, obviously I don't think you can trust. Look, the Republicans are just not—they're not going to go for tax increases. And, you know, I think everyone wants to give the president the benefit of the doubt and say that, well, you know, what he really wants to do is raise the cap or do something, you know, less, you know.
In other words,
more in keeping with what
everybody's assuming that he's going to stick to his multiple expressions of that promise during the campaign.
Right. And you know, the thing is that I don't – what I see happening, though, is among the conventional wisdom – is that, well, you know, raising the retirement eligibility age, you know, a little bit here and tweaking the COLA here and doing this, that, and the other, and maybe some, quote, exciting new ideas like the change CPI, which I won't go into. But, you know, there are these little, they're what seem to be sort of arcane technical tweaks that are actually quite serious benefit cuts.
James Galbraith.
You know, I guess I have to ask, why now? I mean, why is it? Social Security is not contributing to the deficit.
Right.
It is funded for the moment. There's no reason to do this,
you know,
other than some message that, you know, we're being fiscally responsible.
James Galbraith was on this program, I guess it was last week, and said that those cuts that you enumerated, raising it to the age to 69, the COLA cuts, the CPI cuts, all those cuts altogether would mean actually 35% reduction in Social Security benefits, and which is astonishing because this is being proposed to prevent Social Security from having to pay out 25% cuts in benefits.
I know. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that just amazing? I mean, the whole logic of this, well, we have to cut Social Security now because we're going to have to cut it later. I mean, I just, you know, I don't even understand what, you know, there is no logic.
There is
it.
Some type of disease that these people have. I'm being a little bit facetious, but I had this exact conversation, somewhat heated, with Jonathan Alter after doing Dylan Radigan with him yesterday, where he basically said exactly what you just said, like, look, is it really that big of a deal to raise the minimum age in 30 years from now and these other cuts? And I'm like, well, but why? Like, you know, like, I understand what you're – I understand that you think that it's not a big deal, that these cuts aren't really that big of a deal because, you know, whatever. We're all going to be bionic in 40 years or whatever
right,
it is.
Right.
But why? And there is no answer for that. Other than like Social Security doesn't contribute to the deficit. Well, it borrows from the general fund. Are you suggesting that it has borrowed more money from the general fund than the general fund has borrowed from it? Well, no. They're not saying anything. This is really just about there is some type of disdain even amongst liberals who love Social Security.
Well, yeah, and they seem to have all just bought into this notion that there's something virtuous in you know, taking the tough line on this and being, let's be reasonable here. This is ridiculous. You people are all being, you know, absurdly stubborn, and all we have to do is just do a few things and we'll be big heroes. I know that among the wonks, and many of whom are in the Obama administration, they truly believe they're going to be rewarded for this. They think that there is a real, you know, not just that it's virtuous to do it on the merits, which it, you know, isn't, cutting Social Security by 35%. Why anybody thinks that's a virtuous thing to do, I don't know. But they seem to think, well, it'll be sustainable. But I think, on the other hand, they also think there's a political benefit here. And this is the part that just astonishes me. I mean, they actually believe that the Republicans, apparently, are going to sit back and say nothing, and that they'll all join hands together and be, you know, be the people who save Social Security. And I've got news for them. I mean, you know, David Frum said it the other day on CNN. He was on talking about, I think it was on the Fareed Zakaria show on the weekend, talking about the fact that the, you know, the most important demographic to the Republican Party right now are senior citizens. Now, they have a problem because their ideology doesn't match their constituency, right?
Right.
And they're not
going
to give up their ideology, but they can't give up their constituency. So what they're going to do is let the Democrats do all the dirty work to carry out their ideology and then blame them for it so that they can, you know, be the big heroes to their constituency. This is a horrible political trap that the Democrats are getting into, and essentially they are, you know, they're basically tossing aside a rationale for having the Democratic Party. I mean, they're basically doing Republicans' dirty work for them, and then they will be, you know, as I think you and I talked about this before, in the last election, the one issue that Republicans mm-hmm. ran on was that the Democrats were cutting Medicare by $500 billion. They went on and on and on about it, and they were rewarded heavily for that.
Now, we should tell people, this is the Democrats cut back on Medicare Advantage, which was an incredibly inefficient system because private insurers were heavily involved in that process. And
absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, if there is a problem in the deficit, it is in the growth of healthcare spending. I mean, we know that. And that's, you know, Medicare is a big part of that. And they're trying, you know, in some ways to deal with that through the healthcare reform. And that was part of it, was to get rid of that inefficient, wasteful program, you know, the waste in that program. But what happened? The Republicans who are hostile to the very concept of Medicare on an ideological basis,
right.
They believe that, you know, I mean, this is what could be worse than that? It's a government health care program. But they ran, you know, shamelessly as the protectors of Medicare. And they're going to keep doing this because this is the constituency, for a variety of reasons, that has become their most reliable.
Let me quote you what Jonathan Alter said in the course of this argument. It is just so stunning to see this belief system up close. He said Obama will make sure that they own the speaking of the Republicans. Obama will make sure that they own part of this. And I said, and so what? So what? I mean, and then I said to him, you saw what they did with Medicare. And then I would also say, I also said to him, and we saw what happened with TARP. You know, you have the Chamber of Commerce basically as responsible as any single constituency in the entire country for passing TARP on the second vote. And then they spent $70 million supporting candidates who bashed their opponents for supporting TARP.
What did he say?
Well. I mean, literally, that was the conversation.
No, I believe you. There is no action. You know, there seems to be some idea somehow that Republicans in this situation, you know, have some sense of hypocrisy or shame or something. That's ridiculous. And in the age of Citizens United, it's really short-sighted because you can have shadowy, independent expenditure groups come in. Nobody has to own anything. You can just say it. And it's, you know, brought to you by, you know, whatever. You don't need, there's no disclosure, there's no requirement.
Right, it'll be Citizens to Protect Social Security. It'll be completely funded by the Chamber of Commerce or some other entity that Karl Rove or Dick Armey runs. And that will be the theme for that election. It's absolutely stunning. And I guess, you know, now it's being reported that by Jake Tapper, just came across the wires here at Majority Report Central. We had we have a whole team of runners and directly flowing information from the New York Times building. We were going to use the internet, but now we just use like a plastic tube that actually apparently Obama will propose some new spending in certain areas that address his speech's theme of how we win the future.
I know.
Including innovation, education, and infrastructure, but these increases will be proposed as part of an overall budget freeze, which will also be paired with a call for a ban on earmarks. Your thoughts?
Well, number one, I'm sure that, here's another example of offsetting whatever alleged stimulative effects the tax cut extensions were supposed to give us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this, you know, here we are, we're going to starve the economy of some more money by freezing spending. And again, on the politics, I don't know, do they think, are they under the illusion that they're going to get credit for this? I mean, they also lowered taxes, and in the last election, every Republican ran against the Democrats for raising people's taxes. And by the way, a huge majority of Americans believed their taxes had been raised by Barack Obama.
Right.
So, you know, this kind of, this cutesy sort of concept where you're saying, well, you know, we're going to build up here and we're going to cut over here, but we'll build up less and we're cutting over here and it'll all be great in the end. I hate to be cynical, but I just have a feeling that the only thing anybody's going to remember from this State of the Union is that he raised spending, you know, on whatever, you know, remember back in the stimulus debate when they were talking about, oh, he wants to, you know, plant grass in the Capitol Mall or whatever it was. And, oh, my God, volcano monitoring. Oh, my God. You know, I mean, this so I have just have a sneaking suspicion that it's going to be the, you know, the building part that people are going to remember, and the freezing part won't mean anything except to the people whose, you know, salaries have been frozen and are unable to spend more money in the economy to help get it going. I don't understand the economics of that. I have to assume that they are truly convinced that the economy is on the verge of roaring back to life at such a rapid pace that by 2012 people will have completely forgotten what came before. And I don't know if there's evidence for that or not, but it's not obvious at the moment.
That clearly must be the calculus. The calculus in the White House must be that we're definitely going to win in 2012 and the economy is going to be great. And then we will all be able to win the future.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I think my personal feeling is that they've always kind of been running their plan based on, you know, the Morning in America Reagan comeback. It's interesting, though, you know, Rick Perlstein has an article in Newsweek right now online about comparing the two presidencies. You know, he's the presidential historian, and he it's interesting how different Reagan handled this than Obama, because when Reagan came out after the big, he suffered a big defeat in the midterms, too, and his poll ratings were even lower. And he came out and sort of was defiant about it and said, well, you know, it wasn't much of a setback. We did better than we did, but we're going to stay the course. And that, of course, was his mantra through the entire thing, stay the course, stay the course. And what he was doing was laying the groundwork for taking credit for the economy coming back. I mean, you have to assume, I think, as president in an economic downturn like this, that you're screwed if the economy doesn't come back.
Right.
You know, I mean, after 4 years, you've got a
plan for success, because there's really no plan for failure anyways.
Absolutely. And not only that, do it in you know, and be very rhetorically intelligent about the way that you take credit for it. And that means that from the very beginning, which Reagan did, he never, ever let up on the fact that this was the Carter, you know, recession, and that it was all the Democrats' fault. Anything that didn't, he compromised all the time, but he always laid it out as something he was forced to do by those horrible Democrats who, you know, refused to see the light. So everything he did in those first 2 years was in service of this economic comeback that was going to win him the second term. And so by the time it happened, it was well in people's minds that it was, you know, it was Ronald Reagan all the way who had, quote, stayed the course.
Right.
And it was a very smart long-term plan. And by the same token, the entire country was absolutely convinced that it was that, you know, if the Democrats had their way, they'd, you know, still be mired in the depth of the recession. And that worked, you know, that set the stage for the next 20 years, basically. And, you know, he was smart that way, because he was considered a uniter, but in fact he was terribly divisive. But he sort of brought people together against the Democrats, so
right.
that they all sort of saw them. But he was, you know, he united the country against the Democrats, essentially. And that's sort of the uniting I was hoping for with Obama, but that doesn't seem to be the way it's gone. And granted, I mean, he has a very different style than Reagan. But I sort of wish that if they were going to go by the Reagan playbook, they would have studied that particular side of it, because I think it would have boded much better for the long-term health of liberalism, which,
well,
I think is deep, deep trouble right now.
He certainly implied that that's what he was going to do in, I think, at least one interview during the campaign. But Digby, we've run out of time. We want to thank you so much for joining us. Folks, you can always, I don't know why you wouldn't. I imagine you all are already going to digbysblog.blogspot.com on a daily basis. Hullabaloo. I've practiced so much to be able to say that.
Yeah, you've got it down now, Phil.
Thanks so much for joining us. We'll hope to talk to
you
soon.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. My pleasure. Thanks. Bye.
All right, folks. Oh, here, actually, let's, I don't need to take a break. We'll do, I got one story, and then we'll take a break. Yeah? No. All right, let's just keep it going. I'll take your IMs on the other side. I got one story on the other side here I want to do about Clarence Thomas. A little bit short, the pre-show. No, it's not the pre-show, the real show. We'll get a... Could you set up a post on the blog to get names for Post Show? No. You got to turn your microphone on. No. All right, so stick around for the Post Show, which is yet to be named because we don't have a blog post up where people can give suggestions to it. And I will take your IMs. We'll be right back after this. All right, we're back. Majority Report. Sloppy .0, I guess it is. Under pressure from liberal critics, we should all apologize. I can't wait until Ginny Thomas calls me and asks me to apologize for even telling you this. Justice Clarence Thomas of the Supreme Court acknowledged in filings released on Monday that he erred by not disclosing his wife's past employment as required by federal law. It's just a Supreme Court judge. Justice Thomas said that in his annual financial disclosure statements over the last 6 years, the employment of his wife, Virginia Thomas, was inadvertently omitted due to a misunderstanding of the filing instructions. Hey, look, who put that pubic hair on a Coke can? That's the way that he distracts people. I'm sorry, I didn't, I inadvertently omitted my wife's employment for the past 6 years by right-wing, basically wingnut welfare, because I got distracted by everything that was on my Coke can. To rectify that situation, Justice Thomas filed 7 pages of an amended disclosures listing Mrs. Thomas's employment in that time with the Heritage Foundation, a conservative policy group, and Hillsdale College in Michigan, for which she ran a constitutional law center in Washington. Those two entities. I wouldn't be surprised if the Heritage Foundation didn't fund Hillsdale College, frankly. I don't know this for a fact. As I said, I would be surprised to find out. But I would certainly be even more surprised if the person who funds Heritage Foundation was not the same person who also funds Hillsdale College. Just to give you a sense of how closed the loop is on the right. Today, I want you to listen to Hannity and Levin. You don't have to. And see, and frankly, Limbaugh. How many times in a given day their shows, do they present advertising for Hillsdale College and for the Heritage Foundation? Hannity does the Heritage Foundation, Limbaugh does the Hillsdale College, and Levin does both. You can get the blah, blah, blah. I can't remember what the name of the newsletter is, that newsletter you can get from Hillsdale College. They'll send you just all the tripe that if you haven't received it in the first, glossy format from Heritage Foundation, you can get it from the glossy format from the Hillsdale College. Just all wingnut welfare, man. Do you know how rich I could be right now if this was a right-wing podcast? Do you think I would have to say twice, put up a blog to come up with a name for the Post Show? First of all, we would have an automated system that when I said that, the system itself would put up the blog. And we wouldn't even have to ask you people, nor would we, because that's not the way the right-wingers work, for suggestions as to the name of the Post Show, because I would have the money to hire an advertising firm to come up with a clever name.
That's how E4 happened, right?
That's right. That's right. The justice came under criticism last week from Common Cause, a liberal advocacy group, for failing to disclose Mrs. Thomas' employment as required under the 1978 Ethics in Government Act. Oh, well, that law is 32 years old. How can one be expected to know a law that is 32 years old? Its review of Internal Revenue Service filings show that the Heritage Foundation paid Mrs. Thomas $686,000 from 2003 to 2007. Yeah, it's not bad.
There's a heritage room in the library at Hillsdale College.
Surprise, surprise.
Really? I can't believe it. I'm sure there's a Hillsdale room at the Heritage Foundation, too. And this, of course, is coming on the heels of people asserting that Thomas should have withdrawn from deciding last year's landmark Citizens United case on campaign finance because of both Mrs. Thomas's founding of another conservative political group in 2009 and Justice Thomas's own appearance at a private political retreat organized by Charles Koch, a prominent conservative financier. Justice Thomas and Antonin Scalia said in a statement released by the court on Thursday they had each spoken at dinners at the Koch retreat and that their expenses were paid by the Federalist Society conservative legal group. I mean, come on, folks. People all up in arms because Antonin Scalia went to Michelle Bachmann's day camp on the Constitution for Tea Partiers. If you had any inkling that the Supreme Court was not tainted by ideological and partisan politics, I would suggest that you review Bush v. Gore from 2000, which, as far as I was concerned, ripped any pretense of the Supreme Court having not having partisan affiliations as a, I think, the sine qua non, to use a language that might be used in the hallowed halls of the Supreme Court. Example of that they are, in fact, partisan. Not just ideological, but partisan. I happen to believe that every judge rules based upon their own political philosophy. But the idea of being nakedly partisan, well, Bob Edgar, president of Common Cause, said he found Justice Thomas's explanation about the omission to be implausible. As a Supreme Court justice who regularly hears complex legal cases, it's hard to see how he could have misunderstood the simple directions of a federal disclosure form. You know, here, I have to say, Bob Edgar is being unfair. Because every legal scholar will tell you that Justice Thomas is considered way over his head in hearing those complex legal cases, that he is perhaps one of the least learned, the least intellectually curious, the least accomplished of perhaps any judge who has ever sat on the Supreme Court. So I think it's perfectly plausible that he didn't know that he was breaking the law. Let's let the marketplace sort it out.
You can go to another Supreme Court.
Right. You could simply go and get a different Supreme Court justice. Deborah Rode, a law professor at Stanford University, who specializes in judicial ethics. You know, on the Supreme Court, there's almost virtually no code of ethics. Like, it's recommended that you don't do things that would bring disfavor upon the Supreme Court. Now, lower courts actually have very specific things that they must recuse themselves for. But on the Supreme Court, it's really up to the judge's discretion. And, well, these people have no discretion. I mean, once you select the President of the United States, once you say against every single ruling that we've ever made in favor of states' rights as the uber principle that we always, always pay attention to. Once you cross that Rubicon and say, well, not in this instance, we need to stop the counting of the ballots in Florida because it may lead to a prejudicial notion that George Bush, this is their ruling, that if we do not stop the counting in Florida, it may be prejudicial to the notion that George Bush has won the election. Do you understand that they felt that if we allowed the ballots to continue, it may give people the idea that George Bush didn't win the election? So, you know, the notion that, oh, I didn't disclose this, whatever. The notion that I go and speak to the Tea Party, that I go to fundraisers for right-wing causes, the notion I go hunting with Dick Cheney weeks before I rule in the favor of him on the disclosure of his energy commission, that stuff is chump change. We chose the president of the United States. You think I'm going to feel bad about this other bullcrap? I just took a shit in your living room. And you're telling me that I should worry about not getting crumbs on your table? Don't you see? I just took a shit in your living room. You don't have a dog. That was me. I did it when you went in to get me some coffee. You said, would you like some coffee? I said, yes. You went into the kitchen. I took my pants off. And I went into the middle of your room and I took a shit there. And then I walked over to the table, sat down, you brought me coffee and a scone, and you said, please be careful not to get crumbs on the table. Because I don't have my little sweepy thing. But are you not noticing the fact that I took a shit in your living room? Okay. Well, then guess what? I'm not too concerned about leaving crumbs on your table. Professor Rode noted, for instance, that it was still unknown who contributed a total of $550,000 to Liberty Central, the conservative legal group that Mrs. Thomas founded in 2009 in opposition to President Obama's policies. I got a guess. Do you think it was the Heritage Foundation or someone who funds the Heritage Foundation?
Surprise, surprise.
Wake up, chumps. Wake up. Unbelievable. So, Glenn Beck, this nut job, is targeting. Did I talk about this yesterday?
Yeah.
I did, about the 72-year-old. Oh, we didn't play the sound, right?
Right.
Just play. I talked about this yesterday. He's targeting a 72-year-old woman for articles that she wrote in 1966. And saying that our financial crisis is a function of her. Just play a little bit of a sound from her on Democracy Now. Just get a sense of how this woman's completely. This is the woman that should be getting death threats.
What would trigger him to suddenly zero in on you?
Well, I think that there's a certain amount of just accident that he picked me or picked Richard and me. Partly accident, partly not so accidental, because there were at the time in the late 1960s, early 1970s, there were a number of people who had moved from being on the left, further to the left than me, who were moving to the right, where the pay is better. And in making that move, they sort of took with them their familiarity with the work that we had done and then exaggerated, demonized it. You know, I think that...
And who are some of those people?
Well, it includes David Horowitz, Fred Siegel, Jim Sleeper, Ron Radosh, who recently headlined his blog, The Second Time is Farce, Piven Calls for Violent and Bloody Revolution. That was just a few days ago, because I had written a little article in The Nation talking about the problems in organizing the unemployed, so that the unemployed can have an impact, a voice in American politics. But most of the article was about how hard it is to do.
So, I mean, you see what she's talking about here. I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, clearly, this woman is pulling all the strings in this country. I mean, what they were afraid to say on Democracy Now, that her middle name is Bilderberger. She's talking about how the right wing system works. You got all these neocons. These were people who sort of like tried to move their grand utopian visions of the 1960s into a more conservative ideology. And thus you get things like ground zero in Iraq. We will create this conservative utopia, this free market utopia in Iraq. And so these guys dig back into what they know, you know, back in the 60s, when we actually had some type of political spectrum in this country. And they repurpose this material, demonize it, and then give it back. It's a self-funding, well, not self-funding machine. It gets funding from major industrialists and billionaires who want to shape society in a way that benefits people like them. And Glenn Beck is one arm of this operation. He's the arm that sends people to her house. He's the arm that sends death threats, that outwardly demonizes her for, you know, the masses, while they demonize her. You could draw a wonderful sort of flow chart of how this all works. So whether it's, you know, Ginny Thomas or Clarence Thomas or Glenn Beck, they are all part of the same amoeba. Is that the right word? What are they? Or I guess they're all part of the same organism. They are so tied in. It's fascinating. And, you know, what is their goal? Well, Paul Buscheit at, I think it's Common Dreams. He is a faculty member in the School for New Learning at DePaul University, writes, if you make less than $114,000 a year, which is 90% of us, you've been financially damaged by the flow of income to the richest 1% of Americans over the past 30 years. Based on the IRS figures, if middle and upper middle class families had maintained the same share of American productivity they held in 1980, they would be making an average of $12,500 more per year. Now, that figure over the past 30 years, I don't know what that adds up to. $200,000, you know, it obviously wasn't $12,500 every year, but at this point it's $12,500. If you make less than $160,000 a year, which is 95% of us, your household value has decreased percentage-wise over the last 25 years. According to noted researcher Edward Wolf, only the top 5% of American families, people making over $160,000 a year, increased their percentage of the country's total household net worth from 83 to 2007. This is basically a measure of how income inequality has grown since 1983. The U.S. GDP has quintupled since 1980. We all contributed to that success. Listen carefully to this. The GDP has quintupled since 1980. There is five times more, right, quint? Five times more economic activity since 1980. Did everyone in society did the majority of society, did 90% of society contribute to this quintupling? Did 95% of the society contribute to this quintupling? Or was it only 5% who contributed to this? That's the first question you have to ask. Was it only 5% that contributed to us? And was it the 5% that sits there now, making more than $160,000 a year? And what percentage of that 5% inherited at least a stake in their money? $1 trillion a year. But if earnings, if earnings since 1980 were based on this measure of productivity, of productiveness, if everybody maintained the same slice of the pie in that quintupling of the GDP, the richest 1% of Americans would be making $1 trillion less per year. In other words, they're making $1 trillion more per year than they should have if we all got a slice, an equally growing slice of that pie. That's seven times more than the budget deficits of all 50 states. And this faculty member suggests that the richest 1%, 400% or more, didn't work harder than the rest of us. They profited from stock market gains, shrewdly designed financial instruments, and tax cuts. I mean, do you think that those people who are making more than $400,000 a year are making it based upon wages? Do you? Do you think that they just got like, hey, I was making $200,000 a year in wages, and now I'm making $800,000 a year in wages? Do you think all those people are just like baseball players? No. These are financiers. They're making it from bonuses. They're making it from capital gains. Fortune magazine reported that the 500 largest U.S. companies cut a record 821,000 jobs in 2009, while their collective profits increased to a record $391 billion. They're winning, folks. The organisms that funds the Ginny Thomases, the Clarence Thomases, the Glenn Becks, the Heritage Foundations, the Koch brothers, they're winning badly. And they're going to win tonight, too, because the only thing freezing the budget will do, besides not creating more jobs, besides paying lip service to the deficit and the debt, which maybe it'll keep that down. That doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless. The only thing it'll do is make it so that the rich in this country do not have to pay their fair share of taxes. Emails, according to The Atlantic, suggest that Bear Stearns cheated clients out of billions of dollars. Billions of dollars. Billions of dollars. Cheated. And all I have to say to that, folks, is what are we going to do? Are we going to move this country forward, or are we going to turn the page? Turn the page, or are we going to go back to the beginning of the book? Read these chapters over again. Don't look back. Former Bear Stearns mortgage executives who now run mortgage divisions of Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Ally Financial have been accused of cheating and defrauding investors through mortgage securities they created and sold while at Bear. According to emails and internal audits, J.P. Morgan had known about this fraud since the spring of 2008, but hid it from the public eye through legal maneuvering. Last week, a lawsuit filed in 2008 by mortgage insurer Ambac Insurance Company Corp. against Bear Stearns and J.P. Morgan was unsealed. The lawsuit supporting emails going back as far as 2005 highlight Bear traders telling their superiors they were selling investors like Ambac a sack of shit. sort of reminiscent of that time that they all went into our living room and took a shit on the on the living floor. Much of this, I to be honest with you, I can't fully understand. We may have to have somebody on to explain it to me. But Bears Mortgage Servicing Division, EMC, admitted they were sometimes told to falsify loan-level performance data provided to the ratings agencies who bless Bears billion-dollar deals. That I understand. When they took these tranches, these bundles of loans to securitize them, and sent them over to Moody's, and Moody said, "How are these loans all good?" "Yeah, yeah, they're all good. They're good. Oh yeah, yeah. These are good. I'd give them triple A rating."
Okay.
But Bears' misdeeds went even deeper. They say senior traders under Tom Morano, now CEO of Allies Mortgage Operations, were pocketing cash that should have gone to security holders after Bear had already sold them bonds and moved the loans off its books. The Bear traders would sell toxic mortgage securities to investors and then sell back the bad loans with early payment defaults to the banks that originated them at a discount. The traders would pocket the refund and would not pass it on to the mortgage trust. I don't fully understand this, but they seem to basically have a process in which they took the crappy loans out of these securities, sell these loans back to the banks with the early payment defaults, and they would pocket these refunds. I'm not sure I follow it totally, but it sounds like we should just move on, folks, and let these people have defrauded their investors out of that money. I just think that to tie up the banks, the courts with these type of lawsuits when we could be doing the American people's business is just wrong. It's just wrong. Let's turn the page. All right, let's go through some quick news. Evan Bayh, who told Ezra Klein in 2010 why he was retiring, it was the corrosive effect of money in politics. Quote, "You want to be engaged in an honorable line of work," Bayh said, "but they look at us like we're worse than used car salesmen." On Friday, Bayh announced that he was joining the Apollo Global Management, a private equity mega firm, as a senior advisor with responsibility for public policy.
Surprise, surprise.
There you go. I guess, in other words, better to sell the used car salesman the used cars than to be the used car salesman having to hawk it to the public. Uh-huh. Newt Gingrich says that legislation would allow U.S. states to file bankruptcy will be likely introduced in Congress within the next month. Gingrich, a former Speaker of the House and a powerful Republican Party figure, told Reuters on Friday. We'll see about that. Newt Gingrich trying to stay relevant desperately. Good luck with that. AFL-CIO has come out sent out a letter talking about how Mitt Romney sat on the board of Marriott until earlier this month. Marriott has, in deference to Mitt Romney's campaign, decided to remove adult content, porno, from its in-room movie options, a decision that would appear to have little to do with electoral politics, except for Romney was blasted by some social conservatives in 2008 for his connection to Marriott. Marriott was like one of the top porno purveyors in the country. Disney, I think, also has a hand in that, but not, you know, as a different company. Apparently, like, the Marriotts in Utah were just out of control with servicing porno. One day, this according to BusinessInsider.com, Boeing just laid off 1,000 workers in Southern California, according to the Orange County Register. The move comes just a day after Boeing agreed to a $19 billion deal with China to produce 200 airplanes for the country. You know what these guys need? They need a tax break. The company has been consistently cutting jobs in Long Beach. It had 20,000 employees there in 1990 and now has only 7,000, according to Long Beach. They need a tax break. Of course they do. And thousands of tribesmen marched in Pakistan's... It's interesting to call them tribesmen, isn't it? As opposed to thousands of people marched in Pakistan's North Waziristan tribal region on Friday against the U.S. drone strikes, which they said killed innocent people, locals told Jin Hao on the phone. I think this is Chinese tribesmen. American pilotless aircraft regularly fire rockets into Pakistani tribal region of Waziristan, as the U.S. officials say the area is the launching pad for cross-border attacks into Afghanistan. Tribesmen say that the innocent people are targeted by the U.S. aircraft. Tribesmen, students, religious leaders, transporters, and shopkeepers joined hands in the protest on Friday. They marched in the city and chanted slogans against the U.S., tribal journalist said on a phone from Miran Shah. Those people, so ungrateful. Have they no idea how much we spend on those drones? And for those of you who think that it's possible to get security in this country so that we will never have a terrorist attack, at least 35 people were killed in a suicide bomb attack on Russia's busiest airport yesterday. More than 140 were wounded at the blast at Moscow's Domodedovo Airport, where witnesses described scenes as bloody carnage. Two planes from Heathrow carrying hundreds of passengers landed at the airport only minutes before the terror attack. Witnesses described hearing the bomber scream, "I will kill you all," before detonating his explosive inside the international arrivals hall. My guess is Chechnyan, right? We shall see. And Britain's economy suffered a shock 0.5% contraction in the last 3 months of 2010. What? You mean all their austerity plans that they're planning didn't create confidence in the business community? The figures will be bad news for the government, which is due to start cutting back on public spending in the earnest in early 2011. You know who the figures will also be bad news for? The people who will be subjected to those cuts. Boy, is it going to be disaster over there, man. Total disaster. And just about to go to the IMs, although let me just say this. I want to say thank you to Majority Report member, Uber member, Nancy. Nancy C. Emails me, "Hi, Sam, your Be That As It May has a long history, apparently first used as a catchphrase in Shakespeare's Henry VI, Part 3. You know, folks deride me for the use of Be That As It May. While I am trying to inject into you people, you heathens, a certain measure of culture... But be that as it may, I can see that it's had no effect. And finally, I think you'll enjoy this story that I saw on foodinvestigations.com. I don't know how I got there last night when I could not sleep. But this is a fun game. Go look into the ingredients of one of those things that you're eating, you have in your cupboard, that is supposedly blueberries. Not fresh blueberries. But, I should say that we don't eat practically any processed food anymore. We eat a fairly boring, but good. Nikki's becoming, she can cook chicken like you can't believe. And we have chicken, and then we'll have, some root vegetable, and then we'll have broccoli. And that's it. We just don't. Occasionally we'll have crackers or something like that. But We've had chicken soup now for, we're going on night four, chicken soup. And it does get better every night. Sweetheart, if you're listening. Pictures of blueberries are prominently displayed on the front of many food packages. Here they are on a box of muffins, cereals, and breads. I understand this is a video transcript. But turn the packages around, and suddenly the blueberries disappear. They're gone, replaced in the ingredients with sugars, oils, and artificial colors derived from petrochemicals. A bag of blueberry bagels sold at Target stores is made with blueberry bits. But the blueberry bits themselves don't even contain bits of blueberries. They're made entirely from sugar, corn, cereal, modified food starch, partially hydrogenated vegetable oil, artificial flavor, cellulose gum, salt, and artificial colors like blue number 2, red number 40, which is actually quite tasty, and green number 3 and blue number 1. Total blueberry pomegranate cereal, made by General Mills, contains neither blueberries nor pomegranates. It's even sweetened with sucralose, a chemical sweetener. That's in addition to the sugar, corn syrup, brown sugar, and syrup that's already on the label. Kellogg's, this is my favorite, Kellogg's Frosted Mini Wheats also comes in a blueberry muffin variety, with fresh blueberries prominently featured on the front of the package. But inside, there are no actual blueberries to be found. Instead, you ready for this? You get blueberry-flavored crunchlets. Crunchlets.
What is in a blueberry-flavored crunchlet?
Sugar, soybean oil, red number 40, and blue number 2.
Oh, that sounds good.
I don't know what gives it its crunch or its let. But you put it together, and it's a crunchlet.
Is red number 40 one of the red dyes is made out of crushed bugs, isn't it?
Oh, is that why we called it bug juice?
I think so. I don't know if that's why it's called
bug juice. Camp or something like that. Trip, they ran Savage Wiener for a while at MSNBC. Yes, I think that was from yesterday. Maybe not. Nefertiti. Good morning. According to Liberal Watchdog Group Common Cause, Supreme Court justice failed to... Oh, I already did that story. Yay for getting hullabaloo down 100%. Thank you. Name suggestion for private blend, private brew. What?
I'm not sure I follow that.
Hold on for a second. Hello? Hi, hold on for 1 second. So, Jessica, what's up? Are you calling me about booking the show?
No.
Are you aware that the show that you book for is still ongoing right now?
You mean it's on the air?
Yeah. In other words, I've got you on speakerphone, and you are also on the air. Can I call you back? And
confidential information here.
All right. Well, I'll call you back shortly.
Okay.
Bye. It's so wonderful when the people on the show don't know when the show is on. That gives me such a warm feeling inside.
That's why I have to sit here, so that at any given point I can look up and see that the show's still on.
That's right. And the look of surprise on your face when you realize that I'm talking. Thank you, Avedon. Oh, yes, how is the sound today, folks? Right? I mean, people should...
Yeah, let us know. We're trying a new preamp out. The levels might be a little weird, but we're trying to get rid of a couple of the buzzing sounds that we noticed were happening. So let us know how it sounds.
Ooh, Superfunk, the majority retort. Mm. Sammy Chat.
I like that.
Sammy Chat or majority retort?
The majority retort.
I just
is it
don't.
Too elitist.
No, it's so. It's just like it's stick right. Around for the majority retort. What did he say? Did he say majority report?
Tort.
Why can't he say majority report at the end of the show? He can't seem to say majority report. Sammy Chat. Sammy Camera One. Sammy Camera One. Digby's analysis is always thoughtful and elevates policy above the politics. Thank you both. Clarence Thomas defense. Ignorance is 9/10 of the law. Thomas did whatever he does. He copied Anton Scalia's answer. I'm happy now. Post-show. After effects. I don't love it. But you'll happen to know, I'm happy now, that you, I'm guessing you contacted Sirota, because I heard from Sirota, and he's sending us a book. How about the Majority Report Freedom Coke Heritage Post Show? Actually, there's something to that. We should claim that we're funded by the Heritage Foundation. Why the fuck not?
They might, like, get confused and send us a check.
Yeah. Or some other right-wing outfit might go, oh, wait, the Heritage Foundation's funding them? We should get on this. We got to pick up the balls here. Avant! And now Scalia is playing patty cakes with Bachman and the Tea Party members in Congress. If you already talked about it, I apologize. I missed the main show because I had to be in culture meeting, and if you knew who I worked for, you would understand the irony. A culture meeting. I'm going to guess. No. Does the initials MS mean anything? It's got to be like an internet thing, right? It's got to be like a software, because if they're talking culture, or maybe, I don't know. Zach Punk, I fully expect to hear Obama tonight talk about our vigorous national debate. I understand the need to elevate the discourse, but all he's doing is lifting a tray of shit over his head. There's no vigorous national debate in our country. What divides this country is not some academic disagreement about states' rights versus federalism. What divides our country is racism and greed. By calling this some of the great national debate, it's validating the hatred. Well, I mean, to be, you know, there is a, yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, I am not terribly excited about the speech tonight, and I know that part's going to be annoying. And, you know, there was a time where I felt good about this stuff because I felt like, okay, Obama's doing this, and he's building up some political capital, which will be spent in this way or that way. But the unfortunate thing is he doesn't spend that political capital in a positive manner. I have no problem with soaring rhetoric and all that stuff if it's done in the service of something that I appreciate, but it's not. Sugar High 77. They're winning because organized labor does not see itself in a struggle with these interests. Chris Hedges is right. Liberal institutions generally are asleep at the switch, but I think labor is by far the most important. Well, I would agree, but you also got to remember, labor leadership has not been aggressive enough, but, you know, they have been withering, down to 7% in the private sector. Sound is crystal clear, a little pop on Sam's mic, but buzz is completely gone.
Yes.
That's exactly what you would have anticipated.
Yeah.
Don't be a putz. Jon Stewart busted out a shofar last night. You got to be shitting me. Motherfucker. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. Yes, I guess. But you know what I can do? A sincerest form of flattery. Flattery in a dime will not even make, I can't even get a phone call. Even flattery in a quarter, because it's very hard to find a payphone that works these days. Oh, look, guess who just showed up in Washington spouting talking points for the for-profit college industry? Lanny Davis. Rachel Maddow shat on Lanny Davis last night. Oh, did you watch the?
I caught a little bit of Cenk, and that was.
I didn't see Cenk. How was Cenk's show?
He was good. I mean,
I missed. I saw O'Donnell, and he gave very, you know, sort of like upfront thank you to Keith, as did Rachel. Mm-hmm. Talk about sincerity. They completely copied everything I said yesterday. I'm sure that's where they got the idea from it. I'm sure they would have never. Somebody actually emailed me and said, dude, they completely must have. I mean, I suspect they probably would have said something if I hadn't said, if I had met. And they probably were aware that Keith had
left. Responsible for a lot.
Ed Schultz did not. Ed seemed a little bit defiant. Like, he was making the case, like, nobody's told me to tone it down. I don't know why anybody would tell him to tone it down.
Yeah. He's probably, I mean, I don't know. 10 o'clock doesn't seem like a good step up from 6.
I think it is. I mean, it's prime time.
Well, I mean,
it may not be a good fit for him. I mean, time will tell. But there's more viewers at that time.
Yeah. I don't know.
From September 17th to year's end, Lanny Davis was paid $160,000 to lobby for a group called the Coalition for Educational Success, a band of for-profit schools with EDMC at its center. Critics say EDMC and other for-profit education companies use misleading recruiting tactics in graduate students with massive debts and no jobs to pay them off. Lanny Davis is really about as low as you can go. Really. I mean, just... That's about it. I don't see how Gingrich is even a contender. I live in Georgia and I haven't heard anything about positive about him. All he is known is being the king of earmarks, only helping his district. Yes, I agree with the majority of voter. War on the poor. At this point, wouldn't it be more transparent to just make the three branches of government publicly traded companies? Next, you'll be telling me that Booberry isn't made with real blueberries.
All those cereals got a reboot, by the way. They don't look the same.
Mm. Come visit us in Florida. My little freezer is filled with real blueberries I bought at Farmer's Market in summer and froze to last me through the winter. There's a place upstate that I go, you can pick your own organic blueberries, and I do that. Yes. I put them out. I put them in trays in my my freezer. Big, big blueberries. You get like a big box like this for like $20. And I freeze them, and then we have them in our oatmeal.
Nice.
And I'm going to grow more blueberry bushes, you know, too, so we could, but, it's awesome. It's awesome. We play a drinking game for the speech? What word or phrase? Catching up on my Nation magazine reading last night, I discovered Ed was on Nation's honor roll for TV broadcast for 2010. Oh, good. Sammy, I've hit the chicken wall and I'm out of ideas. Any way you can get your wife to share said chicken recipes on the blog? It's really simple stuff what she does, but it's very good. I'll talk to her about it. Nothing, you know, it's all pretty straightforward. Taurusy. New York Times. The United States would derive no meaningful military benefit from increased use of alternative fuels to power its jets, ships, and other weapons, according to a government commission study by the RAND Corporation. The report argued that the Defense Department was spending too much time and money exploring experimental biofuels derived from sources like algae with the flowering plant Camelina, and that far more focus should be placed on energy efficiency as a way of combating greenhouse emissions. The report urged Congress to reconsider the military's budget for alternative fuel projects. Hmm. Wow. Interesting timing for that report to come out on a day when Obama was going to basically suggest cuts.
When I was down in New Orleans, there were a bunch of MPs patrolling that were fresh out of Iraq, and they were talking about how a bunch of units that they knew ran their Humvees on their cooking grease because it's hot enough there that you can do that without changing the engine at all.
Oh, right, because the viscosity is such that it breaks down. Yeah, harder to do in colder climates.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it has a higher viscosity than oil, right?
Yeah, yeah. You got to put, if you're going to do it like around here, you got to put like a heater element in your gas tank to kind of keep it at a low viscosity.
Hmm. Interesting. Harold says, sounds good. Jay Schnivo, it's bug juice. I used to believe because sugar water tends to draw flying insects, some of whom drowned in the liquid. Okay.
That makes more sense.
Yes. Conservatives rally behind Ricky Gervais. That's from the other day. Show sounds smooth as a baby's ass. Thank you. Evan nice. By Hoover, thank goodness Oldman is off the air. We need to get Maddow off the air next. How dare she attack people like myself and Lanny Davis just trying to support our families. Could you please play the cash register sound effect in honor of my new job? If you actually spelled this sound out, it's Yiddish for Lanny Davis. PB True, post show, Cedar's Sidebar. Sidebar? Spayf, Randy did her show on the dangers of media consolidation in the wake of the Oldman being taken off the air yesterday, but she could not help but be snarky about Oldman. She closed by saying no one called, saying that they would miss him, saying that it did not surprise her. Ed was defensive with the caller yesterday. The caller was sure Comcast had something to do with Keith Souster, and Ed saw that as an insult to the other host and defended Comcast. He said Comcast has also donated to Democrats. Yeah, no shit. Why might Comcast donate to Democrats?
Hedging their bets?
Yeah, or not hedging their bets. I mean, for God's sakes, the Democrats have controlled Congress since 2006. They gave money to Democrats because they know they got to get through these regulatory processes. I mean, you know, look. I almost feel like I should develop some sort of like code so that if I'm ever in a position where I cannot, you know, where Nikki is holding Mila up in front of my face and saying, don't sabotage your capacity to make money for one crack at somebody or something that, you know, the world can continue to rotate without you making that point. Now, I'll be honest with you. I have yet to actually get to that point where I've been able to do that. But I am trying. But it's very, very difficult for me. And the smallest of things, I feel like that if I do not articulate when they come up, that I am somehow impeaching my integrity. So I'm going to come up with a code so that if, like, you know, I'm ever on MSNBC and someone calls into my radio show and says, hey, what do you think about Comcast? I can say, well, look, you know what Robert Frost would say, or something, you know, like, well, the woods are dark and deep, and I have many miles to go before I sleep. And that's all the time we have. Boo. Breaking news. You know, something. I don't know. Got to come up with some type of code. You know, because it's one thing to say, like, look, Comcast is my boss. I'm not in the best position to talk about this. But then people are like, well, you're a sellout. So then you have to actually make an argument that, no, Comcast is great. And then you have to make that argument. Obama better have invited Pete Peterson and Hugh Jeudet to sit next to the First Lady if he wants people to believe he's serious about the debt. That's from Glenn Beck's cult. That's awesome comment. Gatoron, our blueberry bushes are very low maintenance. Use pine needles to acidify the soil. I do that too. Do you mix it in, or do you just put it on top as a mulch? Krista Count, I want our democracy to be as good as the late Christina Taylor Greene imagined it. After, Tim Kaine throws support behind gun control measures as the White House remains silent. Am I a bad guy for having a slight pre-speech nausea after Obama used Christine Taylor's death and then proceeded to sell her out in the same speech versus little action process he always does? I'm not going to judge you, Crystal Count. Kat Fudan, any chance Ryan will do a Jindal tonight? No, that's why they put Michelle Bachmann up to give her speech, too. She's the she's supposed to be the complete nut job who's going to make Ryan look okay. Ryan will get up there, and he's smooth. He's smooth. He's appealing to, you know, he's trying to cut. He's trying to privatize Social Security, so nothing he says will make him look like an idiot in their eyes. All right, folks. Oh, Tripp says majority report backfire.
Is that what we're going to call our staff malfunctions from now on?
No kidding. What about majority report excretion? Big Ed Schlitz, I am outraged that people would think I would be a part of a company that would ask me to compromise my opinions. I would never do that. It's like people think I used to be a Republican or a guy who used to kiss up to the Democratic establishment. This is outrageous. By the way, Jay Cutler sucks. Who's Jay Cutler? Harold says, majority report redux. Gasland was nominated for an Oscar, and Ruffalo was put on the terror watch list.
We knew about the terror watch list thing, but the Oscar, that's awesome.
Whoa. We put that audio tag on there, right?
That's right.
We blow that out today.
Cutler's the, it looks like he's like the quarterback for the Bears or something.
Oh, okay. All right. Signing off. Oh, that's what it was. I know what he's referring to. At the end of the show last night, Ed went on a rant about Cutler.
Yeah, he usually ends with some kind of football thing right around now. You know, it's like he can't help himself. But good for him. I like football.
All right, folks, please, if you have the opportunity to become a Majority Report member, I'll tell you what, Comcast can't touch me. I mean, until they throttle the bandwidth for this program.
Right, then they can.
Please, folks, please become a Majority Report member. It helps us greatly. The improvement in sound you heard today was a direct result of somebody joining as a dirty effing hippie. And, of course, justcoffee.coop. Oh, somebody wrote me an email about chocolate. Sinclair.
Oh, yeah?
The Sinclair. He who give it. We should have, like, some type of, like, like a he who gave it the Sinclair. ordered some chocolate. He said it was delicious.
I've never had the chocolate.
I know. I'm highly tempted. Check it out. Use Majority in the coupon code. Get a 10% discount. We will see you tomorrow. And Eric Alterman will be with us tomorrow. So check it out. Bye-bye. Shifted into you while I shifted in.